Money FM 89.3, best of the breakfast huddle. On Money FM 89.3, The Washington Report with Nirmal Ghosh, U.S. Bureau Chief with The Straits Times.
Money FM 89.3. You're in the breakfast huddle. Elliot Danker, Manisha Tank joining you, and Ryan's back with finance headlines just after half past the hour.
Time now to turn our attention to the United States. President Joe Biden had welcomed Japanese Prime Minister Yoshihide Suga to the White House at the end of last week, and that marks the first foreign leader to visit the White House in person during the Biden administration.
It feels like pre-pandemic, just for a moment.
A little bit,
there,
yeah.
Doesn't
yeah,
it? Just for
yeah,
a moment. So we're asking how shrewd this move was, especially as the Biden administration has said that it sees Asia as its highest priority.
Meanwhile, other issues include the United States announcing sanctions against Russia in response to what it says are cyber attacks and other hostile acts.
And yet, just 2 days before announcing the sanctions, Biden has offered to meet Russian President Vladimir Putin later this year. So what is the strategy at play here?
U.S.-China relations defrosting to prevent the planet from warming?
Potentially. And what's behind a quick backtrack on the number of refugees allowed into the United States?
Let's do it. On the line with us this morning is Straits Times U.S. Bureau Chief Nirmal Ghosh. Nirmal, good morning. Let's start off with a big one, the Biden-Suga meeting. I mean, how much of a strategic move was this by Biden to drum up America's Asian alliances? And of course, does this highlight how the Biden administration sees Asia as its highest priority?
Hi there. Good morning. Well, yes, it does. The most significant outcome, of course, was that in the joint statement, they mentioned Taiwan, which was the first time they have done so since 1969. The two mentioned the importance of peace and stability across the Taiwan Strait and encouraged the peaceful resolution of cross-strait issues. They also said they oppose any unilateral action that seeks to undermine Japan's administration of the Senkaku Islands, a sentence also aimed at China without naming China. The statement mentioned free and democratic nations working together to address global threats from COVID-19 and climate change, while resisting challenges to the free and open rules-based international order. Again, a reference to China. The fact is that Japan is the U.S.'s most important ally in Asia, and this is seen as a reinforcement of that alliance and an underscoring of how important Asia is. And for Japan in particular, the actual mention of Taiwan was interesting, because if Japan did talk about Taiwan, China would normally not like it. But this is not Japan alone. It is Japan and the United States, and that is symbolic.
Yes, it definitely is. Okay, Nirmal, we've got a big climate summit coming up. Joe Biden's hosting it this week. In a joint statement, the US and China have said they're committed to working together and with other countries on tackling climate change. All of this after several meetings between Chinese climate envoy Xi Jinhua and his US counterpart John Kerry in Shanghai. That happened last week. What was agreed, and is this a step forward with regards to US-China relations?
Yes, it is certainly a step in the right direction in terms of establishing a dialogue on an issue of existential importance. China and the US are essential actors if we are to limit the worst case scenario, which is currently on track for 3 degrees or over warming compared to pre-industrial levels, which would be frankly catastrophic. So what the joint statement actually said was rather broad. China and the US are committed to the aim of the Paris Agreement, which is to hold the global average temperature increase to 1.5 degrees. It said they will take enhanced climate actions that raise ambition in the 2020s. Towards that goal, it said they will increase deployment of renewable energy, work on climate-resilient agriculture, energy-efficient buildings, low-carbon transportation, address methane, address emissions from international civil aviation, and so on. And, of course, reduce emissions from coal, oil, and gas. So rather broad, not much detail. Perhaps the best detail to emerge was a commitment to implement the Kigali Amendment to the Montreal Protocol, which means phase out hydrofluorocarbon production and consumption. That is HFCs, which are super greenhouse gases. That is a significant move. Apart from that, the rest of the details will start emerging in the climate summit, one hopes, called by President Biden this Thursday. But we will really get results in terms of legally binding, at least on paper, results in November at COP26 in Glasgow at the UN Climate Conference. So no specifics yet, but encouraging that there is this dialogue, even while the two navies are shadowing each other in the South China Sea and their top diplomats are sniping at each other. Definitely encouraging.
On a line with us this morning is Straits Times U.S. Bureau Chief Nirmal Ghosh. Nirmal, let's turn our attention now to the U.S.-Russian relationship. Now, how well is Biden's two-handed strategy? One, imposing new sanctions on Russia for alleged past actions, but at the same time, he's offering to normalize relations. How's this approach working out? I mean, you know, especially given that in response, Russia has said that it'll expel 10 U.S. diplomats.
Well, we don't know yet, of course, because there is another complication, which is the health of Russia's opposition figure, Alexei Navalny, who is on hunger strike in prison and said to be very near dying. The president's national security advisor, Jake Sullivan, has pledged that there will be consequences for Russia if he dies, though he did not specify what. He said that's been communicated to the Russian government and they will be held accountable by the international community. But the issue of Navalny was not brought up by President Biden in his conversation about a week ago with Russian President Vladimir Putin. And Mr. Sullivan added that the best way to deal with this issue is privately and through diplomatic channels. So there are very urgent, immediate issues with Russia. For instance, the SolarWinds hack, Russia's buildup of forces on the border with Ukraine, issues that President Biden did mention in his phone call with Vladimir Putin. The Biden-Putin relationship has been rocky. In January, President Biden was asked if he considered the Russian president a killer, and he indicated that he does. So if you remember, that did not go down well with President Putin or in Russia more broadly. There are also the issues of alleged Russian bounties on U.S. troops in Afghanistan, Russian interference in the 2016 election in the U.S. as well. At some point, they would meet because it is important to, and it is in Vladimir Putin's interest, really. A meeting is needed to let each other know where they stand. And of course, it would be in a third country. It is important to remember that distrust of Russia remains very deeply ingrained in the political establishment here.
Okay, Nirmal, let's focus on matters pertinent to the U.S. within the U.S. President Joe Biden has been criticized as he's held the cap on refugees coming into the U.S. at a historically low figure of 15,000 that was set by former President Donald Trump. And 2 months after he pledged to increase it to 62,500, just hours later, he reversed course and the White House said Biden would raise the refugee cap next month. I mean, it's a backtrack. What's behind it and what level might the cap be raised to?
The explanation is frankly a bit unclear. The president did answer a question on this a day or so ago, but the gist of the answer seemed to be that they were unequipped to handle the surge of children at the border and they are ill-equipped to handle more refugees at this time. But that got a lot of blowback from progressives in the Democratic Party, so he had to reverse course. And again, National Security Advisor Jake Sullivan on the Sunday morning show said he is absolutely committed to making sure that America is not only welcoming to refugees, but will also raise the cap. But he did not mention a number. Lifting the policy is essentially banning refugees from, you know, Africa and the Middle East was the first step, and the second step would come in May. Separately, Secretary of State Tony Blinken said pretty much the same thing. Their contention is that the system they inherited from the previous administration is broken and cannot handle the numbers, but they will announce a new cap next month. It is hard to see them going above 60,000, though, this year, which is half of what President Biden promised in his campaign. The administration is arguing that it is basically an issue not of intent, but of capacity.
Final question for you, Nirmal. It's been just over 100 days since the 6th January riot, the one that saw pro-Trump supporters storm the United States Capitol. Prosecutors, of course, have had their first guilty plea. What details could you share with us with regard to this person who has pleaded guilty? How many more arrests so far? And how is this entire case progressing as a whole?
Sure. So the person who has entered a guilty plea is John Schaffer. He is a guitarist in a heavy metal band and is also a co-founder of the right-wing extremist group called the Oath Keepers. The Oath Keepers and the Proud Boys are two particular right-wing groups of the FBI is concerned about. John Schaffer turned himself in earlier in mid-January in Indiana and has been in custody since then. And the hope is that he will yield information on the degree of planning and coordination of the assault on the Capitol by Donald Trump supporters that day. Conspiracy charges have been filed against the Oath Keepers. Schaffer himself would normally face up to 20 years in jail, but because of this guilty plea, that could be down to 3.5 or 4 years. As for arrests, last Thursday, the Department of Justice said more than 410 had been arrested. As of Friday, 370 cases had been opened, with some of them facing multiple charges. At least 163 defendants have also been indicted by grand juries. Now, more than 100 have been charged with assaulting, resisting, or impeding officers or employees. 35 of those have been charged with using a deadly or dangerous weapon. There have been 350 charges of entering or remaining in restricted federal grounds. The FBI is still tracking people down. They periodically put out notices asking for information with pictures of the people they are looking for. So there are bound to be more arrests in the days ahead.
All right. Thanks a lot for taking the time to speak with us. Straits Times U.S. Bureau Chief Nirmal Ghosh on the line.
To listen to more great interviews, download our podcasts at moneyfm893.sg or download the SBH radio app available on Google Play or the App Store.